Welcome to Theology Simply Profound, a podcast of Westminster Orthodox Presbyterian Church, where God powerfully speaks through his means of grace. This is episode 27. Thank you for joining us today on Theology Simply Profound. My name is Bob Turillo, pastor here at Westminster Presbyterian Church. We're located at the corner of Wolf and Joliet Roads in Indian Head Park, Illinois, and we're serving the western suburbs of Chicago. With me today is Rob McKenzie. He's an MA student at Reformed Theological Seminary Global and serves as a ruling elder here at Westminster OPC. Rob, it's good to be with you once again today to discuss dispensational theology once again. This is part five of our series on dispensationalism, and up for today, we are talking about the dispensation that's called the Dispensation of Promise. Dispensation of Promise.
Yes, yes, it is. And it also can be called the Dispensation of Patriarchs. You'll hear that as well.
The Dispensation of Patriarchs.
But usually it's Dispensation of Promise. That's okay. Normally what you hear.
Well, Rob, is good to have you back with us on this particular subject of dispensational theology, discussing the dispensation of promise or the dispensation of the patriarchs, as you said. But let's get right into it.
Okay.
And just get off the bat, what is the dispensation of promise, or as you said, the dispensation of patriarchs?
Although you won't hear that as much, but you know, I wanted to throw that out there. Because if people... people hear that, then they don't know what other people are talking about.
Right. It'd be like an eighth one if, you know, we didn't know that they were the same.
Oh, no. Don't get me going on the different, because there's a 3 version, a 5 version, a 9 version.
Okay. What version are we working
with? Working with the 7.
The 7.
Which is the main one. It is a good number. It's the number of perfection there. Yeah. Well, of course, and that's what most dispensationalists would know and adhere to would be the 7 dispensations. And those who hold the different dispensations are not actually necessarily trying to disagree, and it's more just this is just how we're gonna plan it out. It's becoming a little more common. I think people in theology always want to come up with things that are new, just to stand apart. But anyway, the 7 is the norm. The dispensation of promise, though, so human governments ended. Mm-hmm. That ended with the Tower of Babel. That was the judgment. The people under that dispensation were to allow human government to mandate the godly laws that are in our hearts, that are on our conscience, since the dispensation of conscience had failed. And the people were supposed to disperse. They were supposed to fill the earth, multiply. But they did not. They stayed in one area. They built a giant tower and tried to create their own religion. So God, in his judgment, confused their languages and then scattered them, which is one of the results of the languages being confused. People, different groups moved off to different areas. So even in judgment, God is fulfilling his commands.
So that ends the dispensation of human government.
Yes.
Okay.
And so now we have some time that passes. We don't know how long, but there is some time that passes. And then God determines that he will start a new dispensation. And by doing that, he... calls a man named Abram, of course we know him as Abraham, from Ur, which is in Babylon, which is interesting because he calls him from the place of judgment. He calls him out of judgment to send him to the promised land. But in this dispensation, we have 3 promises that are made, which is hence the name, Dispensation of Promise. One is that Abraham's name would be great. God would create from Abram a new and great nation, and God would give them a land that God was going to bring Abram to. And so Abram was going to be given this land and his descendants, and that's how the people are structured there.
Okay, so essentially we have judgment that comes, end of Genesis 11. We have an unspecified period of time until Genesis 12. I mean, obviously in the Bible it's really quick, but
right.
But and then you mentioned the point of the place of judgment, meaning that he's called out of the land of Ur. Or the place of the Chaldeans, right?
Right.
Which is what we know to be Babylon.
Right.
And that's why you referred to it as the place of judgment, sort of the scattered yeah. area. And then we have one man called out of Ur to go to be a part of God's promises.
Right. Well, there's a change that's happening here. Mm-hmm. And let me quote Ryrie, because Ryrie notes this change.
Okay.
The governmental feature of the economy is best emphasized by the designation, all mankind had been directly related to God's governing principles. Now God marked out one family, one nation, and in them made a representative test of all. So basically what Ryrie is saying is that God had been working with everyone, the whole world. Now, whether that was Adam and Eve, two people, or all the people that were involved eventually in the Tower of Babel, still working with every person on the earth. Now God is pulling out one family or one person, really.
Okay. So he's choosing one particular man now to deal with. That's essentially the nature of it.
Yes.
Okay. And gives one yeah. man this. But then he uses this language of, in the quote you said, representative test of all. What that sounds a lot like covenantal language.
Yeah.
So what would – in dispensational theology, what would that – what would that representative test of all? What's the nature of that, as best as you understand it?
Well, you have to remember that dispensations have tests. They have blessings and curses. But within that, there's the rules that are set up. It is the stewardship of your household. A dispensation is how we're going to rule our house at this time. And the tests that are given to Abram is to leave the land. Leave the lander and go to the land that God would show him.
Okay.
And of course, Abram is representing. He is the representative of his family and then eventually the nation of Israel. So when God says, I will give this to you and your descendants, he's also giving him a test. You have to leave. And that's going to recapitulate itself within his generations. So staying within the land is going to become the main rule to follow within the dispensation. That's what they have to keep.
Okay. They have to keep the land.
They have to keep in remaining in the land.
Okay. They have to keep themselves
right
to remain in the land by being, following God's, rules.
Right. They're to be faithful mm-hmm. and dwell in the land that God would give them. Okay. You know, God called Abram. He was faithful. He left the land. Although it's interesting because depending on who you're listening to or reading, the fact that Terah, his father, goes with him, and Lot, depending on who you're reading, that can be a problem. Either okay. that can be Abram was actually not faithful, even in his departure, because he brought his father and Lot with him. We will see that God dealing with Abram in this way, because Terah dies. Mm-hmm. And Lot would be a thorn in his side, and they would eventually have to separate. So, you know, was bringing Lot wrong? Was I don't know. I mean, we are told, there is a lot of fighting that goes on, but we're also told that Lot was a righteous man. So, but you'll hear that in within the dispensationalism that Abram right away kind of shows his lack of true commitment until Terah dies. And then once Lot is separated, that's kind of the true, now he's all in.
Okay.
Kind of thing. But, you know, he was faithful, and Abram's descendants were to continue. Ryrie goes on, actually. Let me find this here. Okay, this is from Dispensationalism Today. The responsibility of the patriarchs was simply to believe and serve God, and God gave them every material and spiritual provision to encourage them to do this. The promised land was theirs, and blessing was theirs, as long as they remained in the land. So that's Ryrie.
That's Ryrie. So as long as they remained in the land, I mean, sorry, this sounds almost silly question. So if they stepped outside the land, All right.
No, it's not like that. No, okay. It's not like a jail cell. Okay. It's not. I mean, there's no.
They crossed the boundary.
Can't cross this line. Well, no. They are to remain living in the land. That doesn't mean that they can't go, you know, on holiday.
I'm sorry. I don't.
No, it's okay. No, it's a fair question.
The language. It's a fair question. Just suggests
it does sound like
things.
That. No, and I know you don't. It's a fair question.
Okay.
But yeah, no, they could. They could leave. You know, mm-hmm. go on vacation, go to Egypt to shop, things okay. like that. You know, even spend a couple weeks there.
So try to pull out the rules, right? We've learned so far in that there's rules for each dispensation,
right?
What are the rules for Abraham?
Well, it's to go, it's
okay,
to go
so
to
he
the
goes,
land,
right?
And then it's to dwell in that land. We know that Abram dwells in that land as a nomad. He actually doesn't own any of the land until he buys a tomb. Mm-hmm. And that's really all he ever owns. So the dwelling, I mean, God was saying, I'm going to give you this land. So the faith is the emphasis. You always have to come back to that. Faith is the emphasis here. Abram goes out in faith from Ur to a land that he'd never seen, you know, that, and he uproots his whole family. And he dwells as a nomad. He never actually is given the land that God promises to give him, except that God says, I will give this to you and your descendants. And that's really where the promise is fulfilled, mm-hmm. in the giving it to his descendants. So God makes these specific promises. If the people believe God, and this is Abram, his family, his descendants, then God's going to remain faithful. So this is the rules. That's what you're asking about. You know, the rules are go, remain in the land, you'll receive the blessings. These are long-term blessings, but just like the other dispensations, the people needed to be faithful. Just, you know, Adam and Eve had to be faithful in the garden, not eat the tree. Of course they did. There had to be obedience to the conscience, mm-hmm. And the people were not, and human government failed as well. So, you know, that's, we're seeing this okay. pattern develop.
So in these patterns, one thing that I've noticed as we were talking about this, it sounds a lot like what we would describe as the covenant of works. In the sense that if you disobey, you are thrown out or something like that.
Yeah, there's some similarity.
Okay.
There.
Obey. I mean, obey and live.
Obey and live. Well, yeah. No, you'd ask me on a different podcast about we had been talking about Calvinism and Arminianism, mm-hmm. and I had said that really I don't see how dispensationalists can be Calvinists. And it's because in the dispensations, except for the first one, so you have Adam and Eve in the garden, they are righteous, they can choose right and wrong, and they choose wrong. Now, because of total depravity, how can God set them up with dispensations where they have rules that they have to keep?
Right. Setting them up for failure.
Right. You know, okay, I'm going to give you, here's the rules for you to obey, even though you are totally depraved. Mm-hmm. And that's why I don't see how Calvinism can really fit in dispensationalism. However, a lot of Calvinists who are dispensationalists make it work. But I think they're missing that. I think mm-hmm. they're actually missing the fact that within dispensationalism, the one of the core elements is that the people have to be able to pass the test. So when God says to the people for human government, you have to be able to set up a human government that can and does carry out actions that uphold the moral truth of God. Mm-hmm. And same thing in the conscience. The people have to be able, in order for dispensationalism to actually be able to do what it's setting out to do, setting up a people to obey God, following those rules, they have to be able to do it. And once somebody is totally depraved, they can't.
Right. After the fall, these things are, they're incapable in and of themselves. I mean, which brings us back to Abraham, because you said that the emphasis here is on faith.
Right.
Okay. Well, what faith? What's the kind of faith that Abraham would be required to have here?
The faith to go to a place he's never seen.
Okay.
And the faith that God is giving it to him. I mean, again, he never is given the land himself, mm-hmm. but it is for his descendants, and that's contained within the dispensation. It's contained in the passage. One thing that is always emphasized, and of course, in Reformed theology, we emphasize this as well, that here's Abram, you know, in an idol worshiping area. I mean, mm-hmm. everybody's worshiping idols. Yeah. Abram himself is being called out of this.
Right. Out of worshiping so many different gods yeah. and now monotheism all the way.
So that in and of itself is faith mm-hmm. coming, and dispensationalists would definitely bring that out, that aspect out.
Okay. And then essentially, I mean, would you say that it's very similar to covenant theology then? We also focus a great deal on Abraham being the exemplar of faith.
Well, I mean, yes, in that respect, okay. they would have a high respect for Abraham's faith as we would.
Okay.
Definitely.
Okay. Well, how does all this relate to the Abrahamic covenant that we see throughout the pages of Genesis?
Well, it relates in the fact that the Abrahamic covenant, which is made, you know, soon after the dispensation mm-hmm. Starts, but the dispensation that must be kept, we have to keep it separate. You got to remember that the dispensation is running on a separate course than the covenant does. Same person, obviously, in the way they can overlap, you know, they have things to do with each other, but don't the covenant, what am I trying to say? The covenant is not absorbing the dispensation.
We can't confuse the two.
Right, which it almost sounds like it does. That's why I'm laboring at this, but it doesn't. With the covenant, of course, we see the recapitulation of the same promises from the dispensation are in the Abrahamic covenant. But what the covenant does is it removes the need for obedience of the people within the covenantal framework. Now, in the dispensational framework, we have the conditions placed on the people, but we don't find those conditions within the covenant.
Well, how does that work itself out then? If one doesn't, do the people have to follow the dispensational rules or the covenantal rules or both? Does that work?
It would be both.
It'd be both. But, in one, there's no requirement for obedience, just faith, and the other, there is a requirement for obedience. So how does that work?
Well, you know, the key aspect actually is we got to look at the purpose of dispensations.
Okay.
The failure of the people of the dispensation, you know, these are the stewards of the household. Well, it demonstrates that no matter what God does, no matter what he tries to do, however he deals with mankind, mankind will always disobey. This proves that the people, are in need of something outside of themselves for salvation. So the dispensation, well, it demonstrates that even with great blessings and a godly righteous man as the head of the people, that they'll still fail in the end. But by placing the dispensation alongside the covenant, or by giving the covenant kind of as a bonus, mm-hmm. By doing that, then God himself is saying that he will be the one that fulfills it. He will be the one that hears the promises, you're going to fail. So but because of my grace and mercy, I'm going to make sure that I'm going to bring you to salvation.
Okay, so in this schema, we have a covenant of Abraham, which in covenant theology is a covenant of grace.
Right.
And you have a dispensation, which really sounds a lot like the covenant of works as we would understand it, in this sense that, right, the covenant of works is ongoing. All people fall under the weight
right.
of it. As we said earlier, total depravity, right, condemnation of fallen people, covenant of works, and then God provides covenant of grace. That, I mean, sounds very similar. React.
Well, no, it does. You're right. It definitely sounds the same. I mean, there's a lot of the same structure within it. The difference is that, you know, God is making these dispensations with different peoples. Adam, you know, I think, were you saying, I don't know if it was on or off air, about mm-hmm. Abraham, it was on, Abraham being the new Adam.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It very much sounds like Adam is serving like a new Adam.
Yeah, that Abraham would be like that. Well, yeah, it does sound like that. It's not.
Except he's fallen.
Right? He's fallen, yeah. Right. Yeah, that's the thing. And what he does, here's a big difference. It's not as if Abraham keeps the dispensation, that then his descendants would be given the blessings. Mm-hmm. Abraham, even if he kept it 100% fully, which we'll see in a minute, he didn't. His descendants, even if he had kept it fully, his descendants could still break it, eventually losing it. So in that respect, it's not like the covenant of works, because right. we have a representative within mm-hmm. the covenant of works. But I do definitely see the parallel that you're pulling out. And I think Reformed people would, I could see them being a bit confused.
Well, yeah, I mean, primarily in the sense of the disobedience would require a loss, right? Mm-hmm. Whereas grace, which is how we're typically understand this episode, this covenant, this structure, which is hard to distinguish between dispensation and covenant in my head.
It's a good reason for that.
It's, you know, this is a you're in a period governed by grace, where God comes in and makes these wonderful statements that he is the one who will fulfill it, right? Throughout right. Genesis 12 and Genesis 15, that the way that this is going to, from, you know, to your seed, is going to be because of my activity, yeah. my actions and my events in history. And so what I'm trying to get a handle on is the exact nature of the difference between a dispensation and a covenant, and how they interact with each other in relationship to what I already understand,
sure.
which gets confusing a little bit. And I probably the same for our listeners.
Well, this is a part of the reason why there is progressive dispensationalism now, mm-hmm. is because of this kind of confusion. Mm-hmm. The dispensation of promise, which sounds like it's, you know, the heartbeat of dispensationalism, just the way it sounds, but it's really not. Mm-hmm. It's actually very quickly lost, and, you know, really it's the Abraham covenant that becomes the centerpiece. And so once this dispensation is over, eventually a new dispensation will start hundreds right. of years later.
Yeah.
And God will keep his dispensation program going, but it does become the Abrahamic covenant that becomes what's really important. And that's what we're going to see fulfilled mm-hmm. Within the millennial kingdom.
Okay. So you said that the Abrahamic covenant does become very important in dispensational yeah. theology?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Even though it gets skipped over relatively quickly? Is that what you said?
Well, the dispensational promise is what ends up ending quickly.
Okay. But the covenant itself is something that has it implications dominates. Far beyond. Okay.
Yeah, it dominates. So that is actually something that dispensationalists and covenant reform people can focus in on. And what we're going to get to in the next few weeks is going to be the heart of where our differences lie. Mm-hmm. And how was the Abrahamic covenant fulfilled? That becomes the crux of where we divide.
Okay. Now, let me just back up just one sec. You said yeah. how the Abrahamic covenant is fulfilled. Is there in any sense ways in which dispensations are fulfilled?
No.
Okay.
Dispensations always end in human failure.
They always end in failure.
The people will always not keep the rules okay. of the dispensation.
Okay.
So in the end, in the last dispensation, the millennial kingdom, dispensation of kingdom, that will end in a failure. And our eternity, or the eternal blessing, new heavens, new earth, is actually the end result of the fulfillment of the Abrahamic covenant.
Okay. So covenant then does have a great, or Abrahamic covenant has a great deal
yeah.
To do with dispensationalism overall,
but,
then.
But okay. Remember, and now we're, you know, we're getting way ahead of ourselves, but the Abrahamic covenant is fulfilled in the millennial kingdom within Israel, not for all the people of God. Mm-hmm. Now, progressive dispensationalists would say that would agree with that statement, but would also say that all the people of God become one people of God. And for eternity, are one people of God.
Okay. So. But like you said, we're getting ahead of ourselves.
Way ahead of ourselves.
All right. So we have this covenant, or I'm sorry, we have this dispensation of promise. What happens to it?
Okay. I mean, yeah.
No, go ahead. What happens to it? I'm sometimes just mumbling.
Do you need a break? Do you need some water or something? Okay. Okay. So the dispensation, now remember, I said it gets broken. and it's broken by the disobedience of the patriarchs and their descendants. Abraham fails. He fails by going to Egypt during the time of famine. Remember, he's supposed to stay in the land and rely on God. Now, it's not that he couldn't leave. I mean, he needs food. He's going to Egypt. But he goes to Egypt and lies about his relationship with Sarah. And that's, you know, that's a big thing. Now, if he had just gone to Egypt for food, that really wouldn't, but he's not, see, that's his lack of faith. Remember, it's centered around faith. And we would agree with that. He's wrong in doing that, and that's a lack of faith. But the really big failure for Abraham was that when he had a son with Hagar. So he's given the promise, you will have a son with Sarah, and he's ends up having a son with Ishmael.
Okay.
So that's his main failure, or his failures. Isaac fails when he also goes up to Egypt and lies about his wife. Again, it's the lying. It's more the lying than it is anything else in respect.
Hold on a sec. Let me just back up here. So we're talking about what happens to the dispensation. Yeah. So Abraham lies. Abraham has a son with Hagar. Yeah. We have Ishmael. But
the main failure. Yeah.
But there's still there's still something happening with Abraham.
Well, the dispensation isn't broken yet because although we in a dispensation the people are to keep the rules, but God is a merciful God, and you know at some point you can break them enough that you received the curses.
Okay, so it's not like strict justice,
right? Then. And see, that's that's why you have to be careful about trying to look at it as a covenant of works, because one sin broke the covenant of works.
Right.
So Isaac, did the same thing as Abraham did, but that's not his main failure. His main failure is he didn't listen to God. That the younger was supposed to rule over the older. So Jacob was supposed to be the one who received the blessing, but Isaac wanted to give the blessing to Esau. So that was Isaac's main failure.
Okay,
that he didn't have faith enough to believe God. Jacob, of course, has many failures, and you know leaves the land, you know, without any idea of return. He was going to go. He decided to come back, but 20 years later. Mm-hmm. So that's his main failure during his life until Joseph. Although we'll get to Joseph in a minute. Okay, so sons of Jacob have many examples of unfaithfulness and sin. The most egregious is, of course, selling their brother into slavery to Egypt. Joseph, he is the most faithful of this group. But some actually dispensationals, he'll be criticized because he brought his family to Egypt. Yeah, I know. Well, hold on.
You can't see this, but my eyes are kind of like, huh?
Well, and I only bring that up because I've read and heard dispensationalists that criticize Joseph for that.
Okay.
But then you have other dispensationalists that would say, okay, it was a famine, no problem, come to Egypt. But as soon as the famine was over, they should have gone back because they're not to dwell. That's the thing. They ended up leaving the promised land and dwelling in Egypt. That's the failure.
That's the failure in dispensationalism here. Okay.
Yeah. So then they don't go back. And that's the final straw. And we know that that's the final straw. We know that the dispensational promise is broken and over because of the judgment that comes. And that is, of course, them becoming slaves. They're slaves in Egypt. That's the judgment of God. Dispensation is over.
Okay. That ends the dispensation of promise.
Yes.
So that doesn't end, though, the Abrahamic covenant.
No.
Okay. Now, just for my own sense of continuity, does that mean that the Abrahamic covenant is ongoing? It does not stop.
Correct.
Okay.
So when Moses comes, as we'll talk about in a couple of weeks, Moses comes, you have two things happening. He is hearkening back to the Abrahamic covenant. You know, so when he doesn't come in and say, because of the dispensation of promise, you should come back to the land. No, because that's done. It's basically, this is the God of your fathers, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Mm-hmm. So he goes back to the covenantal language. But then a new dispensation is going to start at that time, dispensational law. Mm-hmm. But it's still the Abrahamic covenant that, that is going to come through it.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So you say the dispensation of promise has come to an end. We know that through the people going into slavery, but there's those three promises that we started the program with that are in the dispensation of promise that you say get recapitulated into the Abrahamic covenant.
Yeah.
So how can dispensationalists say that dispensation of promise is over then?
Yeah. Well, maybe recapitulation might be a bad term on my part.
Okay.
Because it's not really that. It's just it's the same promises given in the dispensation are also given in the covenant. Okay. So, but again, I want to make sure that we keep them separate because they are separate because the dispensation fails, the covenant eventually will be fulfilled. But you know that, I mean, cause you know, dispensation and covenants are very different. They can't overlap. They can't have continuity with each other. Of course, when we're talking about, the people that are contained within them, they might have a dispensation and a covenant and they're still working side by side. They're both from God. But if God had made the dispensation promise with Abraham and then made the covenant with Abraham, but the promises from the dispensation were not in the covenant, then we couldn't say anything about the dispensational promises. We couldn't say, oh, those are going to be fulfilled. But only because they've been placed into the covenant can we say, you know, does it sound like, oh, the dispensation is being fulfilled? No, the dispensation's over. That ended. Because again, theoretically with dispensations, according to dispensationalism, is that if the people of the dispensation faithfully keep the rules, then they will be given the blessings. And that's why this has led Reformed people to, I think, wrongly say, just from hearing that, that, oh, you're teaching different ways of salvation. But as we've seen in Schofield, and to a degree in Schaeffer himself, mm-hmm. they talk about the other dispensations as if you are obtaining salvation. I mean, Schofield pretty much says that.
Yeah.
So, you know, I understand why it's a fair charge to make against dispensationalism from an academic standpoint of this has been taught in your system. That's true. But it's not true that most dispensationalists believe that or really have ever believed that.
Okay.
The Reform need to understand that, you know, it's not the dispensation of promise that's being fulfilled in the Millennial Kingdom. Remember, it's the Abrahamic covenant. And although the fulfillment ends or it finds itself functioning with a new dispensation of kingdom, it's still, even within the kingdom, when you find it later, or when you see the Abrahamic covenant talked about in the dispensational law or the dispensation of grace, if they're talking about the Abrahamic covenant, we still have to keep it separate, mm-hmm. which again, this is how dispensationalism has been. And up through the 80s, this is what was pretty much taught, although it was starting to change then.
Okay.
With progressive dispensationalism. They see, that's where you start seeing the problems. Saucy in the 70s really kind of started to see the problems. Mm-hmm. And when you get to the late 80s with like Craig Blomberg, and other people, they're starting to say, wait a minute, there's much more continuity going on between the covenants and the dispensations. We're seeing much more. They're still separate. Mm-hmm. They're still separate. But whereas before progressive dispensationalism, you did not find dispensationalists saying that you're going to see any kind of Abrahamic covenantal fulfillment within the New Testament or now. But with progressive dispensationalism, they would actually understand some sort of now and not yet, this age and age to come. They still see much more discontinuity than the Reformed do, but they are very willing to say, yes, the age to come is breaking into now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, so, we get that with George Ladd, right? I mean, he does that a lot.
But again, George Ladd was a historic premillennialist, but he was not a progressive dispensationalist.
He wasn't. Okay.
No, but progressive historical premillennialism mm-hmm. still working on the same kind of, you know, errors, maybe a too harsh a word, but still in the same mindset, you know, mm-hmm. of looking for a future kingdom that's yet to come.
Right.
But, and that's why you see with Ladd so much, why he can use the two age model mm-hmm. and actually incorporate it right into his whole schematic, because because he's reformed, mm-hmm. and he has that covenantal framework, and he sees the continuity from Genesis to Revelation, God one plan, the covenant of grace overlapping everything.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's interesting because, I mean, even as you're talking about the dispensations and the differences between Abrahamic covenant and the dispensation of promise, and you say that the Abrahamic covenant does not end and it continues, I mean, the first thing that pops in my head is, oh, it continues. It overarches all of this stuff,
yes,
and it doesn't does. It therefore connect it all? But that's where I think we would have our differences, which is something that we'll be talking about maybe on our next episode, right? The Abrahamic covenant itself from the Reformed perspective.
Yes, yes. That's, I think that's best that we actually lay out what are we as Reformed theologians saying? What does Reformed theology teach when it comes to the Abrahamic covenant? It's going to help us in our understanding of dispensationalism when 2 weeks from now, when we talk about the Mosaic covenant, along with, of course, the dispensation of law, but we're also going to talk about the mystical new covenant, the covenant, the Palestinian covenant.
Okay.
That is a dispensational thing.
So we're going to talk about three things in one episode?
We're going to maybe. We'll
get ready
see.
For a 3-hour episode.
Well, I will, I wanted actually to attach part of that to this episode, but I realized it was going to be way too long. So I said, no, that can't happen. We'll see what we get to. But that's why, one other reason why I wanted to pull out the covenant, the way the Reformed look at the Abrahamic covenant, because it becomes very important. And how we interpret that and find fulfillment, and how dispensationalism finds fulfillment, that is that's ground zero to the problem that we have with each other. And so I think that's why I want to take more time.
Take a little
to
bit
really
of time,
discover that. Because the Mosaic covenant in and of itself is not necessarily the problem. It's the Abrahamic. How's that? That's becomes the problem.
Okay. All right. Well, that's our show for today. Once again, thank you for joining us today on this episode of Theology Simply Profound. If you want to interact with us about this show or one of our other episodes, feel free to find us on Facebook or Twitter at TheologySP. We'd love to hear from you. Or better yet, if you're in the Chicagoland area, feel free to stop in and visit us for worship, 9:30 in the morning or 5 o'clock at night. And visit our website at www.westminsteropc.org for more details. Rob, again, thanks so much for sharing your insights about dispensational theology, helping us along understanding the dispensation of promise and the Abrahamic covenant according to dispensational theology.
It's been great. It's my pleasure.
All right. Next time on Theology Simply Profound, we'll discuss the Abrahamic covenant as we understand it in the Reformed community.